I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to be talking about Finding Huga, a new documentary film by 12 Stars Media of Fishers, Indiana. We're going to be talking about the movie itself, and also about what Huga is and what it means. My guests are Rocky Walls, producer-director, Braden Worrell, associate director, and Grant Michael, associate producer. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today about a new documentary film by 12 Stars Media of Fishers. It's called Finding Huga. We're going to talk a bit about the movie, obviously, and also what Huga is and why it matters. If you want to join the conversation, particularly if you're Danish and you want to correct my pronunciation, please call us at 866-476-3881. You also can send an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Rocky Walls. He is the producer-director of Finding Huga, Braden Worrell, who is associate director, and Grant Michael, who is associate producer. Welcome, guys.
Thanks for having us.
It's good to have you here. So probably I'll start with you on this, Rocky. I don't think we can have a conversation about the movie without first talking about what Huga is.
Sure. Yeah. It's kind of funny, too. The first thing is to pronounce it, right? Like you alluded to. It's
Yeah, probably catching the hesitation in my voice every time I approach it.
Yeah. Yeah, imagine going over to Denmark and shooting a documentary with Danes, and then every time you say it, you're thinking, "Oh, I just know I'm butchering this."
But yeah.
Yeah, so when you first see the word, you think, "Okay, you know, if I can just pronounce it." And it's like, "No," because then when you start to try and define it, you find out the pronouncing is actually the easy part. Because there are all these words internationally in so many different languages that don't conveniently translate to English. They just don't have a translation because we don't have the word for it. We don't have the words to describe this feeling. And so that is one thing that unequivocally we could decide, and we found out that it's a feeling. So if you wanted to put, you know, that limitation on it, it's definitely a feeling, but it's a feeling that means a little bit of a variety of things to people. But what we found out, well, little spoiler alert here, but just to give everybody context, is that it's a feeling that sort of describes how you feel when you're with people in an environment where you feel comfortable and safe. That's why a lot of people translate it as cozy or like comfortable, safe. But it can be brought on by a lot of different factors. So for one person, how you get there might be different than for another. And that's sort of what the film explores, is what it means to different people.
It's a sense of I sort of picked up just from the research I did while I was attempting, among other things, to figure out how to say it for this program. You know, the best definition was feeling a sense of peace in the world or of belonging. So... Braden, how did you guys come up with the idea of doing this movie? What spurred you to think that this would be the subject for a documentary?
Sure, yeah. So for 2017, one of our goals as a whole team was to do something all together, to kind of push our limits and to see what we could produce. And Rocky and his co-founder of the company, Zach Downs, were in Denmark the year before. They had kind of brought back this idea and said, something's different about this culture. This is pretty neat. What would you guys think about looking into this a little bit more? So... And as a team, we kind of said, what if we did a documentary this year? Because most of our videos are in like the 2 to 5 minute range. Mm-hmm. So to take on like a feature film would be pretty exciting and pretty challenging for us. And given just kind of the social climate at the time, we're like, this sounds like a worthy topic for us to do a documentary about.
Was it a hard sell, Grant, or was everybody on board from the beginning?
So the way that we kind of determined that this was the route that we were going to go, there were other options for things that we could do. this year as big projects or things to kind of commemorate our 10-year anniversary as a company. And so there were all these options up on the wall. We had sticky notes to put by the one that we thought was the best option. And I think all the sticky notes were on the page that was for the documentary. So it was a pretty easy sell, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Rocky, this came from the fact that you were over in Denmark and had experienced this. What was it about the culture that led you to believe, okay, this might be this stuff? Because, you know, we're talking about a feature-length film here. That's more than a notion.
Yeah,
There's got to be a lot of story there to carry.
It took some time to get to that. You know, originally I thought maybe we would just do a little research project on this, or maybe we would go to Denmark and we would make a short video. But the first time we were there, my co-founder and I visited in the summer of 2016, and we hadn't heard the word hygge while we were there, or even for a little while after we got back. But those things that we noticed were simple things like the amount of focus that people had when they were together with each other. Simple things that I think we're becoming more aware of and more awake to here in the U.S. and in other cultures around the world. Things like how much attention we're giving to our mobile devices when we're around our friends and family. Things like that. We saw people. Hold on to your hats here. We saw people just sitting in the park, just sitting, enjoying the sunshine, enjoying talking to one another with no mobile devices, no headphones. It was shocking. It was really strange. And so it was mostly around the way people spent their time. It seemed to be just different and a little bit refreshing and relaxing in a way that we hadn't. Obviously, we have that here. But again, we don't make it as high of a priority as I think they do in Denmark.
How did you, because it sounds like this started as a lot of good nonfiction stories do, from a point of observation. At what point did you identify, though, the name for what you were looking at?
So I have a friend who lives there. He's also a client of ours. Our company, 12 Stars Media, produces, as Braden mentioned, lots of videos throughout the year. And one of the things we did when we visited in 2016 was meet with him and talk to him about upcoming projects. And he actually shared the concept of hygge with me after we got back. And so I had brought up some of the differences that I noticed. One of the things that we talked about, because it was relevant to our conversation around work environments and around employee engagement and the way their work-life balance is different in Denmark as well. One of the observations that we made, almost every company, very, very rare for you to find an exception to this, almost every company will eat lunch together. Their employees will eat lunch together, dine together. They'll have a catered or a kitchen just in the building. And they'll have food prepared, and everyone will eat together. Oftentimes, the CEO of a company is sitting right with everyone else. And we were talking about that concept, and he explained that there were a lot of things in Danish culture, both professional and personal, that were quite a bit different. And that's where the word hygge came into my vocabulary at that point.
And how did you settle on the title, the idea of finding it? Because it sounds like it's not necessarily a quest in Denmark. They have found it. It's more a challenge to the rest of us.
Yeah, and so the title itself came from Braden, and I think that it'd be best to let him explain
it. Okay, yeah, Braden, and you've been thrown under the bus here. So
okay,
it's your turn.
All right.
Yeah.
I prefer giving him credit. I want to give credit where credit is due.
That's good.
So when Rocky and Zach introduced us the concept of hygge, what does it kind of mean here? And a lot of it focused around intentionality and contentment. And at the time, this was early 2017, late 2016. So there was a lot of election stuff going on. Brexit had just happened. There was a lot of just social discontentment with what was going on, a lot of distrust with a lot of people, a lot of sources.
I'm not sure we can talk about that in the past tense.
Sure.
Yeah.
But when we started hearing about this concept and looking at Danish culture and their lifestyles and to see how much more happier overall as a nation they are in the past several years, they're always listed in the top happiest countries in the whole world. So we said, hey, that seems pretty interesting. And given our preliminary research, it's it seems like a simple idea, Huga, but the more we dig into it, we figured out it was more complex than that. So kind of finding Huga was a good starting point, at least. So kind of threw that out there to the team where we said, okay, yeah, there's something to this here. So kind of used it as a working title for a little bit, but it just kind of stuck. And it's we kind of hope that when the documentary is finished up here, that the viewers themselves can kind of go on their own journey to find what Huga means to them.
We are talking about a new documentary film from 12 Stars Media of Fishers called Finding Huga. It'll be premiering in March of next year. If you want to join the conversation, particularly if you want to share your thoughts on Huga, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at wfyi. So, Grant, talk to me about the logistical challenges of telling a story like this.
Well, like the guys mentioned, this is pretty far outside the scope of most of the work that we do. So I can't remember exactly how much time we had to really devote to planning before we took off for Europe, but we really packed it into just a few weeks, really, when it came down to it. So logistically, we had to find our interviews, obviously. And I think I was about to jump in before we went to break there for a sec, but I think the title, Finding Huga, that really laid out kind of our approach, too. We really wanted to go into this with open minds and really just try to discover this for ourselves. So we started out doing a lot of research just online, reading articles and trying to track down some of the journalists that wrote them or the people that were talked about in them. So we have a range of people in this film, from people who have given TED Talks to just regular everyday people. So it was really, most of the logistics came down to finding those people, figuring out what perspectives they could bring to something like this, and then trying to figure out how to sit down with them for at least a day. So,
Braden, of the people, who did you talk with as part of this? I mean, who are some of the sources?
Yeah, so we wanted to make sure we had a good variety of subject matter experts. So we talked to people in the food industry, in sustainability, writing, the hospitality industry. We talked to two different people, one Danish and one British person, who studies happiness itself and what truly does make a country on the happiest countries in the world list. And so we wanted to make sure we had a good variety of sources to pull from and to get a good perspective from everyone. But we were up in Canada, we were in Denmark, we were in UK, we were in Iceland. We've done some interviews here in the States as well, a couple out in Denver, Colorado. Just to kind of get a full spectrum of people who are Danish, and then people who have immigrated from Denmark years ago, and they're kind of like a third generation immigrant. And then one couple he's Dutch, but kind of grew up in that Scandinavian culture and was familiar with this and introduced this to his wife, who's from Denver. And so you kind of get her perspective as growing up, someone who grew up not knowing this concept and then just recently in the past few years got introduced to that. And we felt like that would be a good relatable character for a lot of our American audience members who might not be as familiar with the topic.
Yeah, and we're getting reasonably close to a break. I want to talk about how, because really what we're talking about here is a feeling. So a little bit later in the show, I want to talk about how you structure a story out of a feeling and do that. That would seem to me to be the challenge of dealing with this. What were the most difficult interviews, Rocky?
The most difficult interviews, I think, are always with people who have never been in an interview before. You know, like the folks who are very, very used to just having a casual conversation, but the minute you put some lights in a room and put cameras in a room, it starts to
they focus on the lights and the camera and not on the conversation.
Yeah. It's super important for us to just make them as comfortable as possible, which is one of the nice things about the amount of time that we spent with most of these folks. Very few people did we just pop in and then talk with for an hour and then leave. We were spending often a whole day and then overnight, sometimes even staying with these people in order to build that relationship. So it's always a challenge to get somebody who's not used to speaking in sound bites.
Were there folks who were just reluctant to talk about this?
Not of the people that we interviewed, no. We were fortunate that everybody that we lined up was super engaged with us and very, very willing and open to not only talk about it, but one thing that we can explore later is that everybody is very interested in what others have said too, because even in Denmark, the definition isn't completely clear to everyone
as to what hygge is. Mm-hmm. We are talking today on No Limits about a new documentary film called Finding Hygge. It roughly translates, and I emphasize the word roughly, to a sense of contentment and belonging in the world. My guests are Rocky Walls, who's producer and director of the film, Braden Worrell, who is associate director, and Grant Michael, who is associate producer. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimitswfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about Finding Hygge. It's a new documentary film by 12 Stars Media of Fishers. My guests are Rocky Walls, producer-director, Braden Worrell, who is associate director, and Grant Michael, who is associate producer. So we were talking really about how the concept took shape and all of that. I want to, because we are talking about a feeling, and as we've emphasized, no one's got a really precise definition of this word in our language. It doesn't translate precisely. But it is a sense of contentment or belonging. I think the word Rocky used was coziness, mm-hmm. or whatever. It is something that that is ultimately reassuring, I guess, and reaffirming. So that's a really, really encouraging and great feeling to aspire to. How do you build a story around it, though?
Sure, yeah. It's sort of, I think probably anybody setting out to create a documentary film or to write a big mm-hmm. research paper, you have to start somewhere. And I think Grant sort of alluded to it before the break. I really like the fact that we wanted to take this approach of just going into it like completely open-minded, like a child, and saying, we have no idea what this is, but it sounds really nice. Mm-hmm. So we want to ask people about it. And we were fully prepared to go and talk to people and find out completely conflicting things. Mm-hmm. We were completely content to go and talk to somebody who might just say, well, it's this, period, end of sentence, and it's like shortest interview ever. Mm-hmm. What we found, of course, was that the stories were quite a bit more complex than that, and everybody had sort of their own unique perspective, although there were some commonalities across the board. So it's interesting what the film ends up becoming then is just a journey from one person's story to the next, to the next, to the next, and you start to see some of those threads, but you can also pick out the ones that are probably most relatable for you so that you can apply some of those things to your life and have more of this feeling, because that's sort of what it's all about. Something I think was interesting before the mm-hmm. break, we talked about how we landed on this topic to begin with and mm-hmm. how we landed on the name Finding Hygge. And interestingly, one of the reasons it came on our radar was because we aren't the first people by any stretch to quest on this endeavor mm-hmm. to find hygge. In fact, if you go back and look, you can see the Google trends mm-hmm. that skyrocketed around November, December of last year. And it really took the world quite a bit by storm. And 9 books were published in the UK mm-hmm. about hygge last year versus on average, you might be lucky to find one mm-hmm. a year published. So people over the last year or so have been looking for some new feeling of contentment, and that's one of the reasons why this has become so popular.
And I realize I've probably been remiss in my questioning, interviewing here. We probably ought to tell people that part of the reason that we struggle to pronounce it is the spelling, at least in our language, bears. Braden, how is it spelled?
So hygge is spelled H-Y-G-G-E. So if you try to pronounce it phonetically, you're going to have a hard time.
Yeah, and that probably would translate in our language to Hig or Hig or something like that. The structure of the story then becomes this this quest, which is sort of can be a powerful. It's one of the archetypal narratives forms out there. Where did you start with that? And I want to hear, because it sounds like it was a team effort. Any of the three of you, where did you say, okay, when you're all sitting at that table with the 2 weeks of planning that you had, yes, I did see the finger signal over there, Braden, when you were trying to cue Grant.
So we knew that we wanted to go to Denmark, and Rocky and Zach had a few connections over there, and so we had some other client productions that were taking place, and so we kind of had a time frame to say, hey, we're going to be over there for about 10 days in May, the first week of May. And so this was probably like January, February that we started planning, and we said, okay, well, you know, we got to fill it in, you know, find everyone that we want to talk to while we're over there, and book as many people as we can, or and find the right people as well. And so that kind of helped us craft the story and give us a little bit of direction. But at the same time, as we were talking about earlier, we wanted to have a pretty good variety of people to talk to. And we know we wanted to make a stop in the UK on the way back. And we said, well, we've got a flight through Iceland, so we should probably stop there for a few days as well. And so that kind of helped us plan out having that time limit. Hey, we've got 10 days to shoot this, basically. That kind of helped us and a little bit more intentional about what content for we wanted to get for this.
Were all three of you in Denmark? And did all three of you make the trip?
So okay. We should actually specify that 17 crew members went to Denmark. And they have quite a few people. We couldn't fit everybody in the studio today. But there are a lot of people who participated in a lot of different capacities. And everybody sort of brought ideas to the table of who we should talk to and how we should approach those conversations. One of the things when you're going into filming this amount of content is making sure that you have a very carefully planned approach, what kinds of questions you're going to ask folks and what you hope they bring to the table. Of course, it's a documentary and we want to be real. We're not trying to script this out or like I said, we wanted to go into it with an open mind and an open perspective and not try to confirm any biases or any assumptions we had about Hygge. But at the same time, we wanted to know things. Like when you ask, how did it start? For the most part, we started our conversations with these folks just asking them questions about their daily lives and how they connect together as a family, how they communicate and connect with their friends, how their professional work-life balance plays into this idea of Hygge. And so, you know, the first question right out of the gate was not, okay, what's Hygge and what does it mean to you? That was often the last question. And Hygge sort of came out of all of the other things.
Of the sense. We've gotten an email question from a listener, and I should say to our audience, if you want to join the conversation, you can give us a call at 866-476-3881. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. You can track us down on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what our regular listener Ben has done and send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Ben writes, your guests mentioned that the Hygge doesn't come naturally. I'm still hesitating over that, but actually requires actively maintaining it. It's fascinating because the opening line on the trailer mentions that Danes don't spend money they don't have on things they don't need to impress people they don't like. Based on that sentence alone, one might think that consumerism isn't particularly strong in Denmark. And yet, I can't help but think that it's the opposite. In order for Danish citizens to have a happy lifestyle and mitigate what can cause stress, I imagine that consumers would actually be quite involved in what they purchase, whether it's demanding that food meet certain quality standards, demanding that internet remain net neutral, or advocating for better work-life balance. Can your guests comment on the differences between American consumerism and Danish consumerism? I'm going to start with Grant on that one.
It's a big question.
It is. Well, we have a smart audience here.
It's a good question.
It is a good question, yeah. And it's something that we do tackle from a few different perspectives in the film. But I think the difference that I noticed the most was how happy they hire taxes in order to take care of people who don't have what they have. So I think really from a money standpoint, it's not so much spending money on things that they feel are going to make them happier. It's that you know, they're happy sharing that a little bit with people so that the standard of living across the board comes up, so that some of those stresses that come from individuals not having what they need to survive, really, that goes away at that point. So that, I think that plays a big part of the happiness that they have there. Mm-hmm.
Is there a, because what you're saying here also sounds like, and many political scientists, cultural observers in this country have noted that sort of the definition of individual liberty and, you know, the individual's rights is much different than it would have been 60 or 70 years ago in this country, almost to the point where you have some factions of this country arguing that we just don't have any obligations to each other at all. Mm. That doesn't sound like what you found in Denmark.
That's right. Yeah. So I think Mike Viking, the author that we interviewed, is featured in the film quite a bit. And he is also a student or a researcher in the area of happiness as it pertains to a whole country or a nation of people. One of the statistics that he shared that goes along with Grant's comment is that somewhere between 70% and 80% of Danes will actually, if they're surveyed, will acknowledge that they are actually happy to pay higher taxes. Mm-hmm. And he himself admitted that he pays somewhere above 50% of his income in taxes. And he goes on to explain, which I think was really, really eye-opening and fascinating for us, and something that I hope people really take to heart when they watch the film. He goes on to explain the concept of relative income and relative happiness, so that if Grant here makes twice as much money as I do, I look at Grant and I compare myself to Grant in a society like ours in America, whereas maybe they have less of that comparison mentality in Denmark because of the levels of contentment that they've worked very hard to foster. Whereas here in America, we've got that land of opportunity, chase what we want, you know, which is a good mentality to have in some ways, but everything has its advantages and disadvantages. So if society, including Grant and I, were to get twice as rich, which is really great from a quality of life perspective, we're now making each of us twice as much money as we were. I'm still only making half of what Grant's making. Mm-hmm. So relatively, I'm still in the same place that I was. And so that's one of the challenges that we explore when it comes to, it's not just about how much you make or how much you spend. It's about what you're comparing it to. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's less of that across the board in Denmark, which is a really fascinating thing for us to witness and experience.
Braden, you mentioned earlier that you talked to some of the experts, not just you individually, but the team collectively, you know, who study happiness and, you know, who have rank Denmark as the happiest country. How do they quantify that? I mean, how do they determine those things?
Yeah, that's a good question. They have to look at a lot of different categories, obviously. Something that was pretty universal, though, and both the subject matter experts we talked to and the quantitative space said that the happiness of a country is very much tied to how well they take care of the bottom 25% of the population, especially from an income level. All those countries have a pretty robust safety net so that you're the happiest country in the world, but you're kind of bringing up the happiness of everybody because you don't have as many polar opposites. You don't have the incredibly wealthy and then the people who are living in incredible poverty at the same time. They really want to make sure that no one is going to, you know, be out on the streets as much. So fighting homelessness, making sure people have the proper nutrition, proper education. Kind of like Rocky was saying, it's not nearly as competitive in Denmark as it is here in the States. Education is a lot more accessible to everyone. And they found that through by taking away like that competitive pressure that a lot of people feel, there's a lot more camaraderie kind of throughout the population.
What are some of the other factors? I mean, you know, in some ways, I'm not as familiar, obviously, with the work that your film explores, but I know that New Orleans in this country fairly routinely shows up as being one of the happiest, if not the happiest, cities in the United States, even though by most of the metrics we judge successful communities, you know, crime rates, income inequality, all of the other things, it shouldn't be anywhere near the top of the list, but it's often number one, and I don't think it's ever lower than three. Mm. What do you think accounts for that, Rocky?
Well, I can't say a lot about New Orleans.
But I guess in general.
Yeah. So I have come to, I think, acknowledge what most of us probably suspect, is that it sort of depends on how you're defining happiness, to be completely fair, mm-hmm. And what the questions are within the survey. But I think that what our experience in making this film has shown us is just simply that the first thing to do is to step back and question yourself, how are you defining happiness? What does happiness really, really mean? And it is a subjective thing. But I loved one of the quotes that we got from several times, but one from Nick, I think. And Braden, you may be able to fill in the blank if I'm getting it, if I'm missing pieces. But he talked about how sometimes they catch flack for trying to measure happiness because it's a subjective thing. But we actually measure a lot of subjective things. And so, you know, just because something is subjective, should we not try to measure it, or should we question or be skeptical of the results that we see? So I think that's interesting. And I think that Nick Marks, the individual that is featured in the film and we interviewed and who said that, you know, believes that the study and the pursuit of happiness, both individually and collectively, is probably like one of the most important things that we can be looking at right now.
So I want to stay on this. You say that you got to start, because it is subjective, by questioning yourself in making this film, and sort of, because it sounds like, frankly, the subtext here is all of you guys kind of wanted to figure this out for yourselves too. And you were asking that question. Rocky, you know, what did you learn about yourself coming out of this experience, or that you could take and apply to your own life?
Yeah, well, I can tell you one thing's for sure, is that as I started to understand some of the differences in the political and socioeconomical and cultural aspects of Denmark, I wanted my kids to understand that, because I notice how many young people grow up in the U.S. and have very little, if any, real understanding of how other countries are governed and operate. And so my kids are learning American government right now at 8 and 10. And then next semester, they'll learn about Danish government, and then they'll take a trip there probably next May. So something that I want people to, you know, especially my family, my kids, to understand some of the differences in societies.
Grant, what did you learn out of doing the film that you could apply to your own life?
Yeah. So I think the really cool thing was, with every interviewee, we kind of dug into this same question a little bit. And so I think we learned individually things that we could be doing or not doing in our own lives that could have an effect on how satisfied or how happy we are. And I think for me, there were several, but I think the one that comes up in my mind daily now after coming back is trying to get rid of some of the things that distance me from the people that I love and care about. So simple things like Rocky mentioned earlier, putting my phone away at mealtime and things like that. I try to be much more conscious of those types of things that maybe detract from relationships that I have.
Okay. Braden, you're not getting off the hook.
I would have to echo that as well. Intentionally structuring time to kind of disconnect from an online community and really connect in person with as much as possible. So whether that's, you know, taking the time to go out and grab beers with a buddy that I haven't seen in forever, and like Grant said, leaving the phone in the car, or just my wife and I will go on a walk along the creek with the dog, and let's leave our phones at home. Let's not even take the camera. Let's just enjoy each other. And we found that those walks actually got a little bit longer because we were enjoying our time, and those conversations are so much more precious now. And it was an effort at first. It took a while to make that a routine, but now it's you kind of can't live without it.
We are talking about Finding Hygge, the new documentary film by 12 Stars Media of Fishers. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at wfyi. My guests are Rocky Walls, producer-director of the movie, Braden Worrell, who is associate director, and Grant Michael, who is associate producer. I'm John Krall. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about Finding Hooga. It's a new documentary film by 12 Stars Media of Fishers. My guests are Rocky Walls. He is producer-director. Braden Worrell, who is associate director, and Grant Michael, who is associate producer. If you want to join the conversation, you can give us a call at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at wfyi. So I think the big question, the one that this has to build to, is what lessons from this? I mean, yes, we started at an individual level, and I asked you right before we went to the break about where things are. What lessons about the way the Danes structure their culture can we learn from them to increase, if not hygge, at least levels of contentment and community and a feeling of belonging in the world? Yeah. I think I've started with Rocky pretty frequently, so I'm going to start with Grant on that one.
Yeah. I think a lot of it, like Braden mentioned before, it comes down to intentionality in a lot of the things that you do. I think we all have habits in our lives that may lead us kind of down the path that kind of takes us away from being happier. So I think a lot of the things that we learned coming back from spending, a couple weeks with a lot of these people who say that hygge is part of their identity and part of their culture, is that they're intentional about the time that they spend with their loved ones. They're intentional about how welcoming they are to strangers. That was kind of a big topic that we dug into. So I think intentionality about the way that you interact with the people around you is a big part of it.
Braden.
One thing that almost every single interview we brought up was connecting to nature, being outdoors. For example, one of our Canadian interviews, her grandfather immigrated to Canada from Denmark and started his own nursery there. And that was a big core structure for their whole family, getting outside a little bit more. And probably one of the highlights from the trip was when we were on the east coast of Denmark with the family, and we went to the beach, and their sons and us built this sauna right on the beach and made a fire inside and poured some water on these hot rocks and steamed up the whole sauna on this makeshift tarp structure on the beach. And then you run out, once you're all nice and hot and warm, you run out into the freezing cold water. I forget what that body of water was called, but it was like 38 degrees Fahrenheit. And so just that change in temperature. But that was a tradition that they had done and that we got to participate in. And just being around that with, no phones, just connecting with each other outdoors, that was truly special.
And how long did it take for feeling to restore itself to your body?
That took about 45 minutes afterwards. We were huddled around this campfire on the beach afterwards for a while. Yeah.
Rocky.
Yeah, I think decluttering, to simplify it a little bit. The email question that you got, thanks again, Ben, for sending that in. That's a really good question. And that comment there at the beginning about not necessarily having to buy anything to achieve this, because that's sort of counterproductive, actually. I think what most of us find, and what I think a lot of people assumed we would find, is that even if you didn't have a word for it, hygge is probably there in your life. You probably, even maybe listening to someone describe it now, you might be like, "Oh yeah, I've felt that before. I know what they're talking about." But our issues, more often than not, are actually that we let other things come in and clutter it up, and so we don't feel it as strongly because we let something else come in, whether it's a phone or whether it's stress from our day at work or whatever it might be. So, I really try to be intentional, going back to what Grant said about just focusing on the things that are cluttering it up for me. And saying, like, how can I go ahead and let some of those things go, decompress a bit? Getting out into nature is a great way to do that. Enjoying just time with somebody that you really care about and love, without any of the distractions, without stressful conversation, mm-hmm. can be a really great way to get that feeling.
How much of this, we come back to the phones and all of that, and that's appropriate because that has been just a huge transformation in the way people live in a very short period of time. Mm-hmm. If we were able to magically transport ourselves back 30 years, we probably would be shocked that it is possible to walk down the street without staring at the palm of your hand all the time and all of those sorts of things. But even before then, a lot of these things were manifest in our culture. And I don't think I'm you know, it's almost a cliche to say that most Americans define themselves either by what they own or what they do. Mm-hmm. And at least part of what I hear the three of you saying is the Danes sort of, well, A, in some ways they skip the question of definition altogether. But in other ways, if they're forced to do that, it's not about what you own or what you do, it's who you are. How did they get to that point, Braden?
It's an interesting point because we got to travel all over Denmark and we got to see kind of both sides of the spectrum. We were on a billionaire's private island, and then we were just kind of with a normal Danish family and their children at their home. And it was very, very nice home, but pretty, very simplistic. And they were talking about how if they ever see someone driving a sports car through the countryside, they kind of feel bad for them because that person probably spends so much time focusing on maintaining and upkeeping their expensive sports car that they just, you know, forget to take a moment to look out the front window and see the ducks resting on the pond. And, like, that's a very exciting moment, and you can get a lot of pleasure and contentment and just kind of tranquility from moments like that.
I mean, you know, it's almost probably the closest parallel in our history or culture might be the transcendentalists of the early 19th century. Ralph Waldo Emerson, Henry David Thoreau, those folks, I know this is, and this may be a question that the film anticipates, how do we get back to that? Because it is an almost forgotten strain in our culture now. Rocky, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I think that's the whole reason we have the film, because the things that have gotten in the way have made us hungry for it. And that's part of the definition of hygge. Like, one of the things that we found, and should be, I think, fairly obvious, is that in order to feel that sense of safety, you also kind of have to have the sense of unsafety or dissatisfaction, too. That's what makes the safe thing, that's what makes the cozy thing feel that much more cozy. And so I think that a lot of the things that we've been experiencing in our lives, in our culture, have driven us to this point and make us want to go on that long walk, and make us want to disconnect a little bit more. So I think that part of it is the negative side effects of some of those other aspects of our lives. They're driving it to us. You know, it's driving us to find this.
Grant, how do you think we recover that strain? Because it was a part of American culture at one time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tough question.
It is.
Tough question, yeah.
It makes me think about a quote that we got from Mike, the author of the little book of Hygge, who had a lot of really good things to say. But one of the things that really has stuck with me as kind of the most important moments that we captured was that by introducing this word to Americans specifically, we've given people a way to kind of identify these moments that maybe take them back to those simpler pleasures and simpler times. And so once you start to recognize those moments, you can start to seek out more of them. Once you actually are intentional about looking for those things in your life that actually bring true happiness, not just the garbage that we tend to fill our lives with, you're able to, I think, effectively go back to kind of when things were simpler and maybe a little bit easier to be happy.
I probably ought to because we're starting to get toward the end of the program. We still got some time, but realize as much as I would love to keep the conversation at the transcendental level, I would not be fair to you guys and the film that you have done if we didn't talk about when it's going to be premiere, where people will be able to see it, and all of that. So where is it in production right now, Rocky?
We're in post-production. We've finished a first cut. Anybody who knows anything about filmmaking probably knows that we had a lot of material and we had to trim it down. That's been the biggest task, is trimming it down to a feature length, so around 90 minutes. And so it's at that length now, but we have a lot of fine-tuning to do. it will be submitted to film festivals, and then depending on which film festivals pick it up, we should have a premiere somewhere in early spring, around March. And then the ideal situation for us is to have it available on some streaming services so that anybody anywhere could watch it.
Will there be an Indianapolis premiere? Anyone? Or
That would be definitely a goal. It will depend on, you know, whether we self-host something like that for all of our friends and families and listeners here, or whether there's a premiere as a result of one of our awesome local film festivals that we have here.
So I'm going to ask this because I always find it, anyone who tries to tell a story, what do you hope at the end of the day? You know, if you weren't trying to connect with someone else, you just would have written all of this down in your journal and kept it to yourself. You weren't trying to provoke. What do you hope, and I'll start with Braden on this, what do you hope the audience will take away from seeing this and seeing this record of your journeys?
One of my goals for this film is to get it to start a dialogue amongst a lot of people and to create kind of a change of that discontentment feeling that, that we kind of feel in society. I think that needs to start on a very small local community level. And so I think after people watch a film like this, it will encourage them to have some neighbors or friends over for just like a simple meal, put the phones away, and just continue that conversation in that way. And then making small changes in the community around you, I think that can spread. So starting small, starting local, and then kind of growing out from there would be a good goal for us.
Grant, what do you hope they'll take away from it?
I think we spoke to enough different types of people and different personalities in the film that consider different aspects of their lives to be hygge, that I think it's going to be nearly impossible to sit through this film and not, after finishing it, be reminded of something in the film because of your daily life. Whether that's, you know, taking your dog for a walk, or whether that's sitting down, you know, and having dinner with your family, whatever it is, you're going to remember that moment in the film, and hopefully that's going to trigger something in your mind that says, oh, that's what they were talking about for those 2 hours in that film about those Danish people. And hopefully that then leads our audience to take more notice and then be more intentional about finding more of those moments.
Rocky, what do you hope is the takeaway?
So I'm going to hijack your question just a little bit and say that even before you can see the film, we would be remiss if we didn't bring up the fact that the Danes would consider this time period we're in right now, the holiday season, as the most hygge-ly time of the year. They really, really take their holiday season seriously. And so I would hope that people right now could be applying some of what we've talked about today. Everybody listening is going to have that opportunity to be with family and friends over the next month. Find some time, grab one of them that you feel comfortable with, put your phones away, go for a nice walk, go enjoy some Christmas lights, even if it's around your neighborhood, and just enjoy that feeling of, you know what, this is sort of what it's all about. Let's enjoy some time together.
I've gotten an email question from a listener named Jacob. And again, if you want to join the conversation, you can reach out to us via Facebook at No Limits WFYI. Track us down on Twitter at WFYI. You can call us at 866-476-3881, or you can do what Jacob did, send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Jacob writes, I've heard there is a dark side of hygge, a side of Danish culture that encourages xenophobia and exclusivity. How does your film address the issues that immigrants and expatriates face when they immigrate to Denmark? I'll throw that one to Rocky, I guess.
Oh,
you're looking at me.
There you go. All right. All right. So this concept of a dark side to hygge is definitely addressed in the film, and it's definitely one of the things that we found first, or very early on, I should say, when we started researching. And the easiest way to explain it in the short amount of time now we have, if we had gotten that question at the beginning, we probably could have talked about it a lot longer. But the idea, the very nature of hygge, as we talked about, the fact that in order to feel that feeling of safety and coziness, you have to be with people and around people that make you feel safe.
So it can be exclusionary at its worst.
Absolutely. And so if you are an expat, you just moved to Denmark, you've got a new job there and you don't know anybody, it might be very difficult for you initially to break into some of the social circles. In fact, just about everybody that we talked to there acknowledged that that difficulty and acknowledged that was something that they could, as a culture, improve on.
Is there, I mean, is that one of the, because that sounds actually like it could be pretty lonely. Is that one of the themes that you explore in the film, Braden?
Yeah, we do explore that a little bit, because while Denmark is consistently rated as one of the happiest countries in the world, it also has some pretty higher rates of depression and suicide than you'd think for a country like that. So we brought that up to a couple of our interviewees and asked them to explore that a little bit. What's the reasoning for that exactly? Because if you see that everyone's being happier, if things aren't going as well for you, then that just makes you feel sadder, a little bit more depressed. So it's kind of a catch-22.
What's the one thing, you know, that in listening to this, one small practical step that anyone, because I want to pick up on Rocky's point, we're at the time of year right now, that someone could do who is listening to this to, I don't even know if this is the right verb, achieve more hygge. It sort of defies all of our linguistic attempts here. But to get to that state, how what's one thing that we could do? Grant, I'll start with you.
I mean, we've talked a lot about putting our phones away, but that seems like we've covered that one pretty well. Specifically, I think being very, very intentional about the time that you spend with your family over the holidays or friends, making sure that, you know, you are taking time to listen to them. I think listening and being open is a big part of this, and kind of fosters that type of atmosphere that leads to kind of the connections that hygge brings about.
Braden?
I would say give the gift of your time instead of like a physical present. Maybe this holiday season you could try doing that instead. You know, just take a family member out to a nice local meal if you can. Make that a challenge. Find a local restaurant and make some connections in your community that way.
Okay, Rocky, you get the last word here.
I would go with something even more specific and say make something. Build something, you know, craft something. Now's a great time of year to get some people together and craft something. You know, I think there's a reason why that's becoming so much more popular. I can't get on my Instagram or my Facebook without seeing a group of people who have just crafted a wreath together or done something related to getting ready for the holiday season. And I think that idea of making something with your hands and taking that time, it forces you, right? If you got glue and glitter all over your fingers, you're not going to get your phone out. So it just sort of forces you to have that time with people.
That will have to be the last word. I'd like to thank my guests, all of whom have been involved in the production of a new documentary film by 12 Stars Media called Finding Hygge. It's going to premiere in March, is in post-production right now. My guests have been Rocky Walls, Braden Worrell, and Grant Michael. I'd like to also thank our listeners for hanging in there with the conversation. We will be back on Thursday when we're going to be talking about another documentary called The Past and the Present, about the historic preservation movement in Indianapolis. I'm John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.